Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. It's me, Joe, your regular casual comics guy. And today we're talking Batman with the biggest classic Batman fan I know, Jeff.
Say hi, Jeff. Hi, everybody.
And Michael's here.
Hi, guys.
How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm groovy. How are you?
Yes, groovy. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm doing so great.
You had some animal trouble. You are literally Catwoman there.
I wish I was Catwoman.
Well, this week, everybody, what we've got here is a rewind on the classic Batman movie from 1966. It occurred to me as we were talking about watching The Batman with Robert Pattinson, that as people rank the greatest Batmans, the Batman actors on screen, they often leave Adam West out of the discussion. And Jeff, you have practically lived and breathed this movie forever. And Michael, you've never seen it before. So I thought we'd mash it all together, watch Batman, the movie from 1966, and see how we feel. So that's what we're covering today. But first off, everybody, big Marvel news, Thor, Love, and Thunder trailer dropped this week.
How cool was that?
It was, I'm pretty pumped, Michael.
I'm pumped. I mean, I like Thor. I've liked all the Thor movies. I wasn't 100% sure whether this movie was about Jane or whether it was that the lead in was just about Thor and that the movie's actually going to be all Jane. Like, is Thor a star of this movie or was he just teasing out, getting us excited about it?
It appears to me to be Thor starring in Eat, Pray, Love or something like that.
A little bit, because it doesn't seem like Jane's the only love interest in the whole affair.
Maybe. I don't know if that's a
it was
dream
a moment
sequence.
It was
I don't
a,
know if it's
it was a moment.
I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or Thor mm-hmm. on the pirate ship with the blue-haired lass.
No,
with Korg, with the little bromance.
With whoever Chris Pratt's character is.
Peter Quill.
Oh, Star Lord. Yeah.
The look
I
mean, in his eyes.
I would pay to see that. Just saying.
Those big, beautiful blue eyes. Those big, beautiful regenerated eyes.
It was definitely a cute trailer.
That's not a regenerated eye, Jeff. That's a bionic eye.
You sure?
Don't you recall the movie where they give him a bionic eye?
Oh, did they? I don't. Yeah. I've only seen Endgame once.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Sure.
What does a bionic eye do?
It's a robotic replacement for your eye. It's just a mechanical.
I mean, is it just like as good as a regular eye? So wouldn't you just want a regenerated eye? Is it better than a regular eye?
It's better, stronger, and faster. It goes like this.
Are you familiar, Michael, at all? The Bionic Man? Lee Majors?
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Oh, my gosh.
The $6 million man? Oh.
That was after Batman, but not too far after Batman, right? What do you think
was? About 10 years.
76?
No, not even that long.
No.
Yeah.
What, 73, 74?
That was when they had the TV movies. There were two TV movies, and then they went to series shortly after.
Man, you just learned about Adam West, Michael, and now you got a whole Lee Majors thing to
I'm
catch up on.
I'm getting educated.
Do you remember the Fall Guy?
I'm a whole new woman. The who? The what?
The Fall Guy?
No, what is
remember
that
TV show? No. All right. Big Valley? No? Nothing? Okay.
0%.
All right, we're off topic on the Thor Love and Thunder. But
I think
Michael,
we're on the right topic.
Lee Majors played the Bionic Man, in which he's an astronaut, and he got into a rocket crash.
Yes.
And they had to rebuild him better, stronger, faster, which meant that he had one bionic. It's just basically robotic, but it looks like it. So they don't have to like have the special effects to have him have. They just put him in slow motion and then make a sound effect. So you know it's a superpowered arm. And he has a superpowered arm, a superpowered leg, and a superpowered eye. Legs. Oh, I forgot.
I feel like I want to ask a dangerous question. Go ahead. If you only got to choose one, I don't know. I shouldn't ask this. If you could only choose one part of your body to be bionic, and do not pick the one that I'm worried about anyone answering with, what would it be?
Go ahead, Jeff.
I would choose a bionic heart so that it would never break. Oh,
you would. You know what, Jeff? I don't think that a bionic heart would be better than the heart you already have.
Oh, thanks. The weird thing is they kind of already do have bionic hearts.
I know, right? So it's just you wishing for a heart transplant. A heart transplant.
No, not really. Not really.
No. What about you, Michael?
So anyway, he gets a bionic eye.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, what about you, Michael? Same question. If you could get a bionic body part, like one body part is superhuman, but just one.
I feel like this is so hard. I actually think an eye is not a bad choice, because if it does more than just seeing, I have 20/20 vision, you see. So, you know, it has to be better than perfect.
I think he had telescopic vision. He could see things that were really far away, but I don't think he had like X-ray vision. Like,
can he take pictures with his eyes?
Yes.
Okay, then I'm in. That's cool.
Theoretically, I think he
can.
But he could in the book.
But there's no VR heads up like there are now, like Google Glass. It's like Google Glass, but slightly worse. Bionic eye.
But do I look cooler than I would if I was wearing Google Glass?
I don't know.
Anybody looks cooler without the Google Glass.
That's not hard. Okay.
All right. Well, let's get back on track though. Thor: Love and Thunder trailer drops, comes out July 6th. Level of excitement, Thor: Love and Thunder versus seeing this trailer versus Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Where are you on those?
I'm excited about both of them.
They're very different. And that's what I love about Marvel. That's, I guess, like, I'm sort of my bottom line on the trailer is I'm watching Moon Knight, which is super dark and gritty.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm loving it. And the Multiverse of Madness looks insane, horror kind of almost. And then to know that you're going to get this sort of palate cleanser with Thor: Love and Thunder behind it to be like, here's something goofy and funny and silly. I'm excited.
Yeah, excited in totally different ways for totally different reasons.
With your bionic body parts.
Well, there you go.
All right. Well, thanks for catching up with me on that, team. That comes out July 6th. Super thrilled for that. But today we're talking Batman. So we're going to take a quick break. Cue the bat music. And we will be right back.
Jeff, can you just do the sounds? Batman. I was waiting.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Let's go, but inconspicuously, through the window.
All right, everybody. And we're back to discuss Batman 1966. Jeff's got sporting the classic bat gear. He's got the classic bat outfit. So Jeff, you're going to be like our tour guide of Batman from 1966. Again, a movie that people overlook when discussing all the films of Batman and what's better. And do you compare and do you contrast? So we're going to talk about the basics of this, talk about the portrayals of the heroes, talk about the rogues squad, the villains. You okay, Michael? And then we're going to get to a point where we actually try and discuss. So hold these thoughts for the end of comparing this Batman to the most recent Batman film that came out in theaters and some of the parallels, see if we can get to the same place on some of them. So Jeff, why don't you give everybody a quick backgrounder on the 1966 Batman movie?
Okay. Well, they're starting to develop the TV show. Okay. And the idea is let's start with a movie and then let's go to the series. ABC's ratings are flagging, so they want to pull Batman from the fall schedule and put it on as a mid-season replacement in January, you know, a whole lot earlier. So they scrap the idea for the movie, and they go ahead with the first season. First season is a huge hit. They decide to go ahead and make the movie anyway so that they can sell the series overseas, and they can use the budget of the movie to create the Batboat and the Batcopter and all this other stuff that they're going to be able to reuse in the second season of the series. So they go ahead and they run with it. They make the movie, and it's a big hit. And there you go. What else do you want to know?
So we're talking about the 1960s era of Batman. You're talking, yes, first off, 1960s era of TV. So special effects, little primitive at the time on TV. Very. There's some amazing stuff that happens in the TV series in the movie. And then you're also talking about a Batman time in comics where Batman's just, it's a simpler time.
Much simpler.
Their biggest concerns are villains who are trying to put them into a giant boiling tea kettle or something like that.
Floating octopus.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, because they're coming off of the run of Batman in the 50s and early 60s, which, quite frankly, Batman's popularity is flagging at this point. And the series actually revived the character and just gave him the shot in the arm to make him the powerhouse that he continues to be to this day.
Right. So while in the comics, you had villains like the Joker and the Riddler and Penguin and ones that people would be familiar with. they're very cartoony and very like over the top, and right. almost in ways like non-threatening. This was a show for kids back in the day, and it was just like, don't be too scary. Can't scare the kids. Can't.
Right.
But it's very action, some dynamic stuff. But it was an era of Batman comics where, like you said, it was flagging because the character had been running in comics for a good 20 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little dry in the well. And they weren't referring too much to real life things. They tended to steer away from that. Like, they're not talking about serious crime. The most serious crime is some dudes going into a bank and stealing bags with giant dollar bill signs on them. That's the era of the comic books. So, you know, with that as the background, you've got a tone of a show that's a little different. And so, Michael, you know, hoping, you know, you and I just watched this movie for the first time. And Jeff, how many times have you seen the movie?
Oh, gosh.
Over under on 70 times.
Oh, well, okay. 70 is a bit much. okay. 10 is absolutely reasonable.
10? No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feels low.
If you've seen this movie 10 times, no, that's not
possible. Once in the theater.
You're surprising me. I would have thought at least 2 or 3 times in the theater.
And once with Adam West.
Saw it once with Adam West. So that one counts as like 10 times.
It kind of does. Yeah.
Were you sitting next to him?
No,
just
but
like you
I
guys
did.
On your couch?
Yeah, we're eating Cheetos and just having a great old time. No, I actually got him to sign my Batman Bat book at the time. And yeah, it was great. He came to give a lecture and then show the movie.
Where was he giving a lecture?
Yeah, this is incredible.
It was at Creighton University.
Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. Adam West is there.
Yeah.
Invited to give a speech on Batman?
On the Batman movie. What? And Batman in general and his career and whatnot. And he talked for, you know, a good 45 minutes or so. And then they rolled the film.
Afterwards, he
signed stuff.
Was he wearing an ascot?
No, he was business casual, I'd say.
Did he speak in long, dramatic pauses?
No, not really. Not really. He just seemed to be a regular guy. You know, he the thing about Adam West is he got what this was from the minute he read the script. And he said, I know how to do this. I can make this work. And sure enough, he ended up being the guy.
Well, he was right. So you're our tour guide here, Jeff. And Michael, you saw this for the first time. You know, what was your immediate reaction to this portrayal of Batman? You know, you having grown up in an era where Batman was at the most, the earliest, Michael Keaton, right?
Yeah, Michael Keaton was my first Batman.
Michael Keaton.
A little bit more Val Kilmer than Michael Keaton from my childhood, I guess, from memory. But I thought this was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously it was campy and cute and colorful and way overacted in the way that it was intended to be. Mm-hmm. But it was just really fun to see how they made a lot of the things that you see them try to do today in a very sophisticated fashion. Done in an age where you couldn't do these things with, like, you know, the graphic effects and all of the stunts and things we have in our hands today. Like, we were sort of laughing at, you know, them going down the fire poles. And then at the one point, Adam West goes back up the fire pole as Batman. And I was like, is he going to get his suit back on when he goes back up the fire pole? Which unfortunately he did not, but it was just super, super cute. I really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's a little more fantasy sci-fi than trying to be realistic. Gritty.
Well, yeah. And like some of the underwater graphic effects were just adorable. Like the way the submarine had the little flippers that were catching. But I did say, I thought that a lot of future characters were still very inspired by these characters. So, and maybe more by the comics than these characters, but even like body movements, like the way the Riddler, I'm going to use a word that I don't know is the right way to describe it, but very like pelvic and like weirdly thrusty in his movements, and like like Jim Carrey and the guy that played the Riddler in this Adam West version of Batman, they felt very similar to me. Like I felt like there was a lot of inspiration from this. And I was even saying the little penguin submarine that head that popped up in the penguin version where Danny DeVito is there, like a lot of the images that they used and like the toys that they had sort of in the subway system in that version felt like they were inspired by some of the things that had put together in this one. So I don't know. I had a really good time watching it.
Yeah.
We just watched it a couple of days ago. Can you give your recollection of your recap of what the plot of this movie is?
So there are the good guys being Batman and Dick Grayson.
Batman and Robin.
The
and,
Boy
and,
Ward, and, Robin,
and,
yes.
And what's going on in the movie?
They are up against the, what did they call themselves? The Underworld.
The United Underworld.
United Underworld, which is the Joker, Penguin, the Riddler, and Catwoman.
Yep.
And these folks are, there's actually like a couple different things that they're doing.
What's their plot? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, they're trying to take over the world, I think. Right.
Right.
And they're going to do that by going after what is tantamount to the UN version of this movie, which I don't remember what it's called.
They're going United to, World
Council. The United World. Okay.
Yeah. So, they're going to kidnap the United World members by dehydrating them.
Well, there's a couple different things they do that are thwarted, but yes, the dehydration was particularly interesting.
They're going to dehydrate them and put them in little vials. Uh-huh. And then was it they were holding them hostage?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they were for money, though, for $1 billion per country.
For $1 billion. That was still a lot. That was even more than Dr.
Evil. More than Dr. Evil's $1 million. Yes. I was surprised by that, too. That is exactly where my head went to, Jeff.
Uh-huh.
But before that, they kidnapped a dude and made him think that he was still on a submarine the entire time. Well,
I thought that was just to commandeer the submarine.
Right.
So who was that? I don't know.
That was Commodore Schmidlap.
Yes.
And it was played by the prolific actor Reginald Denny in his final film role.
Wow. Oh, nice. Where would our listeners know Reginald Denny from? Like what?
A whole lot of old movies that are probably now in the public domain. But he had a huge career.
What's one that I would know him from?
I couldn't.
Has he ever been on something that's been turned into a Mystery Science Theater?
I doubt it. His career went back a long, long time.
All right. Great character actor. And then there was the, it was interesting to see their comedic portrayal of the era. Like they commandeered. I thought I was with you that they commandeered this submarine, but there's a moment where Batman calls like the Admiral of the U.S. Navy and says, have you recently sold a nuclear submarine to somebody? Like, why? Yes, we did.
And they were like, and you did so without even confirming their home address?
Right. All they got was a P.O. box.
Those idiots.
To a Mr. P.N. Gwynn.
Yes.
P.N. Gwynn. Mm-hmm. I like the complicated plot machinations. There's always something going on. It's somebody's scheme and Batman's continuing. Like he's foiling one scheme after another. they just keep getting crazier and crazier. They make Batman think Catwoman is some lady named Miss Kitka.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can kidnap Bruce Wayne and then
to lure Batman somewhere.
Right. And then they're trying to lure Batman, but he is Batman. And he like nearly tells her a couple times because now they're getting hot and heavy.
That was a little more hot and heavy than I was expecting.
He fell in love with her pretty quickly.
It's a movie, you know.
He fell in something with her. I mean, I don't know if I call that love, but yeah, it was a little more aggressive for the age than I was expecting. Yeah.
One of my favorite moments is too they're foiled by common decency because Robin and Alfred are supposed to be keeping an eye on Batman. And when things start to get a little amorous, they got to shut off the surveillance cameras because common decency would just be like, you don't watch Batman.
Getting it on. Yeah. But more Robin, like Alfred was like, it's fine. We can just like keep an eye out. And Robin was like, no. He was so offended by the idea of spying on their love affair. I'm with Alfred.
And Alfred, crazy dude in this one.
He's an old perv.
So overall, thumbs up from you, Michael, on the tone of the show. It's more campy, goofy. Go ahead.
I thought we were moving on, and I just feel like it's really important that we pause on one of the key opening scenes.
Go for it.
Where there is an exploding shark. Yes. I don't feel like we're doing any listener a service by skipping over the most important and critical moment of the whole.
Let's take a quick break and we'll get to our favorite moments from the movie.
Okay.
Before we get to the end.
Did I jump the gun?
No, that's okay. That's a great idea. It's just people are probably like, oh my gosh, I know I'm like, I gotta go use the bathroom. So we'll take a quick break. I gotta get the, I wish I had the bat dehydrator at this moment.
You do too.
And we will be right back with more bat goodness.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Luckily, we're in tip-top condition. It'll be faster if we run.
Welcome back, everybody. I keep wanting to slip in a same bat time, same bat channel reference in there, but maybe I'll figure it out before the close of the show. But we're talking Batman 1966. I've loved this movie for a long time, Jeff. I know that you've got, like, it looks like at least $300 worth of Batman merchandise from this era sitting on the desk right now while we're talking.
A childhood obsession of mine.
But I wanted to use a few minutes here to talk about the Batman and Robin, right? It's like we talked about at the beginning. Everybody's talking about Robert Pattinson and how his portrayal of Batman stacks up against these other things. I want to talk about Adam West and his characterization of Batman. So in a nutshell, how would you like describe, like, if you know, Robert Pattinson's, you know, people are dark, brooding, sad boy Batman. Mm-hmm. How do you nutshell Adam West's Batman?
Adam West said it best himself. He referred to his portrayal as the Bright Knight.
Ooh,
not the Dark Knight.
Like it. Adam West, kudos to you, sir. You should be a man of letters in addition to a man of the stage.
Yeah, no, and I think that really sums it up. The tone is kid-friendly, family-friendly. Nothing too scary, nothing too gory, nothing offensive. Just fun.
I think the thing that struck me watching this again, having watched it just back-to-back with the most recent Batman movie, is, man, he's a better detective than a lot of the other Batmans I've seen, because the Riddler's hammering him with one riddle after another, and it's like, blam, blam, he's knocking him out of the park. This last Batman movie, it took him like ages to figure out, and he still got him wrong.
Yeah, and Robin's no slouch either, because he's answering the riddles too.
I feel like I would never have answered those riddles. Those are hard.
Oh, come on.
What are we talking about here? This doesn't make any sense.
All right, Jeff, a ballpoint banana? Everybody knows that one.
What? Yeah, exactly.
What was one of the riddles? What
something? People are always in a hurry.
Oh yeah, what people are always in a hurry? Russian.
That one was good, but the ballpoint banana, what the heck was that?
I don't know, some stupid thing because the writers needed some sort of banana reference.
Yeah, who knows, the ballpoint banana, but they were complicated riddles, and Batman, it didn't take him much more than a few minutes to figure them out. Unlike this whole Rata Alata thing that had Robert Pattinson's Batman stumped for ages.
Right.
But he seemed to be, yeah, just a much more positive, enthusiastic Batman, and a Batman who any parent of the 60s would be proud to have as a role model for their child.
Absolutely. And Batman and Robin, although they are, their identities are hidden, they are duly deputized officers of the law, as Robin points out in the movie.
No vigilantism here.
Not really. No, he's all sanctioned.
Right. Michael, your thoughts on this Batman and Adam West and Burt Ward there as his teen ward.
Robin. Yeah, I mean, they were wholesome, right? I thought that they're meant to be, to the point, like lighter characters in a lot of ways. You didn't get a lot of the Batman backstory, right? Like the dramatic past led mm-hmm. him to be Batman. He was sort of just this person that was fighting crime, and, you know, that was very respected and, mm-hmm. you know, part of the sort of like crime fighting police universe, but it wasn't dark in any way, which was kind of nice.
You get his backstory in one throwaway scene in the very first episode of the TV series. He talks about his parents and all of that. And that's the last you ever hear of it.
Which makes, yeah. I mean, it introducing that story is complicated, right? Like in and of itself, making it a kid-friendly series or kid-friendly movie, like that's pretty deep topic to approach. So I mean, it makes sense.
Disney does it all the time. Murdered parents are like par for the course.
Yep.
2022, man.
And amputations.
Oh boy. Disney's going to some dark places ever since the beginning. Jeez, yeah. Ever since Bambi's mom. Holy cow.
Wow, you're going back a ways.
Yeah, really.
I was just talking Star Wars and the MCU.
No, all the way back. I mean, Lion King. There's a lot of parental issues that Disney characters have. So it wasn't unusual for Batman, but they don't take it to like a dark place in this movie. Like I said, they don't even mention it in the movie. And he's, when you say crime fighter, it's interesting because more recent portrayals of Batman is he's literally like street justice crime fighter punching dudes. But the origin of Batman, I mean, the reason DC Comics is called DC Comics is because it was stood for Detective Comics. And Batman was the world's greatest detective. He wasn't like two-fisted street justice. He was preventing and investigating crimes very much in the way he does in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And kudos to the Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson, because they really returned to the detective story in the Batman movie recently. But the original with Adam West, he was always, you know, solving crimes with his wits and with all of his super gadgets and his bat computers and all the technology that he had hidden away in the Batcave.
And he wasn't afraid of the fisticuffs either when they were necessary.
Not at all.
Michael, you're cracking up. But when we were watching the movie, you were surprised at the vocabulary used by the dynamic duo.
I really loved it. I was like, I feel like a lot of times I get teased about using just ridiculous words in normal conversation. And this movie was riddled with ridiculous words that
you had
in standard conversation.
There was a scene in the movie where Batman used a word that you enjoyed so much, you looked it up on Google to make sure it was a real word.
There were a couple of them that I had to look up that I didn't know. And I was like, this is so great. How am I going to introduce this into my repertoire?
Do you remember the scene? Do you remember the word I'm talking about?
The one I was thinking about it was a Catwoman scene, the Cossacks one.
Oh, yeah. She referred to somebody as a Cossack. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of the scene where Batman can't get rid of the bomb, which we can talk about when we talk about favorite scenes. But there's the people in the bar that it's Robin's stance against drinking, and Batman calls somebody a rum pot.
Yeah, I never heard that word.
I've never heard that word either.
It's a really cute word to describe a drunk.
Yeah, he's just like the rum pot. There were a lot of moments like that in the movie where it was just very much in Robin saying, I can't imagine using a substance that would alter my sharpened senses.
Yeah, there was definitely like an anti-drinking thread they were pulling there about people not being at their best when their senses were dulled with alcohol.
That's what I mean about this Batman being a good role model. There was that message. There was the insistence that everybody buckle their safety belts.
I was going to say that. Yes.
And drink their milk.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think the Bright Knight is correct. And now Robin, somebody who you don't see in a lot of the movies. There was just the one. What do you think about that dynamic, Michael? I mean, they're called the dynamic duo. Batman worked better with a partner in your mind?
I mean, it gave them a lot more sort of opportunity for Batman to sort of at some points be vulnerable and sometimes have somebody bail him out of things. Like, I don't know that I ever feel, to be completely honest, like Robin's character is more than just like sort of a, he's just a kitschy sidekick. I don't know. I don't feel like Robin's just not my generally, well, but he was cute.
Ryan, we'll have to have words with you about
that. I know Ryan's going to he's going to cut me. This is bad.
I think part of it stems from the fact that in the comic books, like, Robin's supposed to be like 14, maybe 15, and Burt Ward's not pulling off the still high school age. Uh-uh. You're just like Batman's just hanging out with his slightly younger friend. Not like the origin of Robin, where his parents are also killed tragically, and Batman adopted him practically, and then made him into the crime fighter that he became. Although maybe this takes place later in Batman continuity where they've been doing this for a long time. And I mean, when do you ever outgrow that? I guess at some point you become Nightwing in the comics, but
I think they've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, I would say that they're as far as when this TV series takes place, I would say it's at least Robin year three at minimum.
Robin year three. We're gonna peg that and then research it later. See how close we are. Thoughts on the costumes, Michael?
I feel like I'm always the one who's going there, which makes me sort of feel weird about it, but
you don't have to go there.
You can cover
the stuff above the waist.
I just felt like there were a lot of scenes where you were not able to not look at everyone's crotch. That's hard.
That was actually a problem on the show.
They had to
make sure things weren't so obvious.
Visible.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I get it. If it was meant to be kid friendly.
Had to do a lot of smoothing.
I don't know exactly what that means. I'm getting some Buffalo Bill vibes off of that statement.
Sorry, I forgot that earlier before we started the podcast, we were having trouble with you and your dongle and how uncomfortable my dongle
was acting up, but it's good now. I will say I did love Catwoman's outfits, which is to be expected. I thought her outfits were on point. And I thought that the coloring for the Joker was really good.
Okay.
There was a lot of purple.
There was a lot of purple. I'll say, in addition to the color scheme was awesome, especially on the villains. I do like the gray. I mean, the Batman gray and blue is classic, but Adam West, still only Batman that I've seen that pulls off that look without some serious body sculpting rubber suit. That dude's just, it's all Adam underneath that skin tight spandex, and he's doing it. He's like,
yeah, he looked great.
Although Dennis Miller once made a joke that the thing he looks for in his superheroes is distended belly.
Was that a thing?
He gets it with Adam West. And you know, what can you do? He's got that big belt around there to kind of hold things in.
Yeah.
But it's spandex. You know, you've got to be pretty darn toned to pull off spandex.
Yeah. Did they wind up adjusting the costume in later years? How long was the TV series on?
The TV series lasted for 3 seasons, so they really didn't have time to innovate.
So he didn't get too out of shape, and they didn't have to like start cutting the thing higher and higher and giving him bigger shoulder pads.
No, he's not like Shatner in season 3 of Star Trek. He pretty much maintains.
So he always has the eyebrows then too on the mask?
Yes, absolutely. And Burt Ward maintained because he was in great shape. He actually sparred with who's the guy? The famous Kung Fu guy.
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee. They were good friends and they sparred with each other. Yeah.
Hey, that makes me, I respect Robin just a little bit more right in this moment.
Yeah.
What about the ancillary heroes? Commissioner Gordon, Chief O'Hara.
Chief O'Hara is the single most incompetent police officer in the world.
Jeff had that ready. Jeff was like, I hope I get to say this during the podcast.
I've been waiting. Yeah. The Gotham police force is pretty much good for writing tickets and, not much else. They don't know what they're doing. They're very incompetent. I can't imagine them, I can't imagine cops riding along with the Gotham folks going to a domestic violence call. Well, it's not happening. These guys wouldn't know what to do.
It is interesting, right? The way that all the future Batmans had to develop that is instead of making the police force just incompetent, right? Now they're corrupt. Like that wasn't really part of this. There wasn't any police officer in this that I recall who was up to no good. It was
they're wholesome and upstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is worse, maybe, in my mind.
Well, but in order to make Batman and Robin the effective crime fighters they are, by comparison, the police have to be, astounded at everything they do because they're so much better than we are, which makes them look like a bunch of morons running around.
Basically.
Yeah, Commissioner Gordon, not so gritty. Him and Batman, best buddies, got the bat phone wired straight into the bat cave. There's a lot of bat stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which I like. Batman's gadgets in this are amazing too.
Bat shark.
That's something you just got to have on hand at all times. All right, let's take a quick break. Talk about the villains too, because the villains are something to behold in this film. And I forgot how much I enjoyed it on the rewatch, and I wasn't sure where I'd land because I haven't watched it in a long time. I'm like, does it hold up? And I think it held up, and where it really held up for me was in the villains. So let's take a quick break and come back and talk about the rogues gallery of Batman.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. They may be drinkers, but they're still human beings.
Hey, everybody. We're here to talk about Batman 1966 today. And now is the part where we talk about the villains, Batman's rogues gallery. So like we talked about earlier, this film stars... Jeff, I'm going to say the character, you rattle off who it is in the movie, the character, the actor.
You got it.
Joker?
Cesar Romero.
Riddler.
Frank Gorshin.
Penguin.
Burgess Meredith.
Catwoman.
Lee Merriweather.
I knew that one.
Michael and I looked it up because I was like, I'm not sure which Catwoman it is. Is this Julie Newmar or is this? No. It was
Julie
not.
Newmar was away filming a movie called McKenna's Gold. And was unavailable for the movie because they did it on the summer hiatus between the first and second season.
Got it. Well, so, well, let's get into Catwoman and Catwoman portrayal a little bit. So we're talking about Lee Merriweather. In the course of the TV show, three different actresses, right, played Catwoman.
Yes. Well, two on the TV show, but on the show. The third one being Lee Merriweather in the movie.
Okay. And it was Julie Newmar.
Julie Newmar, in my opinion, the best, the absolute best Catwoman of all time.
And Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt, popular singer. Eartha Kitt came in and took over in the third season.
Okay, third season. So I see by that time you were like already, hey, this is Julie Newmar's gig, and she came in as a replacement. Why did she come in to replace Julie Newmar, that just was on break and like for the Batman movie? And then they're like, here's Lee Merriweather. And then like the season started again. And like now going a different direction now.
I can't remember exactly why Julie Newmar was unavailable, but she was unavailable for later episodes. So they went ahead and recast so they could have consistency.
All right, Michael.
And she's not the only one who got recast.
Who else got recast?
For one set of episodes, the Riddler was played by John Astin, the guy who played Gomez Adams on the Adams Family.
All right. Well,
and that was because Frank Gorshin was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do it again. But he eventually did come back.
He was on Speed.
Well, I don't know about that.
His character portrayal seemed like he might be. He was the Jim Carrey of the era, truly.
He had manic intensity going more than Cesar Romero.
All right. So, Michael, let's cover Catwoman. Was your first earlier. You're like, I loved Catwoman. I always like Catwoman. You have two cats. You are kind of Catwoman.
I am one short of crazy. So
costume, character, portrayal. What? Give us the lowdown on Lee Merriweather as Catwoman.
Costumes are great. The whole movie, she's just feeling herself. Like, she's like kind of like grooving and like sort of dancing and like moving her body up on like scratching her back on stuff and like cleaning her face and licking her fingers and just being sort of this like weird feline being, which I thought was very awesome. There were two things. One, I wanted her to be, she was more of like a method of deception. She didn't have a lot of like butt kicking moments. There were only a couple moments where she actually did anything physical. I think it was in part of the times, like just the woman's role, I guess, on this scene wasn't to be doing action. But obviously the Catwoman that I grew up with were more doing backflips and like part of the violence. So I was looking for that a little bit more in this. And then the only other thing I'll say is that she did have an actual cat on the set that I felt was being traumatized.
Poor Hecate.
Lovely black cat was on the scene, and it was at one point in Batman's arms as he's like fighting everyone. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this poor cat is just got to be losing his mind. They even throw it into a lifeboat. I don't know who that cat was.
The cat overboard into the lifeboat. The cat seemed unharmed by all of the events. But yes, Batman's like having a fist fight with dudes while he's got holding a cat.
A real cat.
Right. And this cat is obviously agitated. So what's the best thing to do with him? Throw him into a rubber raft where I'm sure his claws are going to do absolutely no damage whatsoever.
I feel like that's a good call out, Michael, about why, you know, like even in Michelle Pfeiffer and all the more recent portrayals of Catwoman, there's more physical, there's more action. And I almost feel like if you look back at it, movies have gotten more sophisticated with choreography, especially like martial arts and kung fu and things like that. But the fight choreography in this Batman movie is very just straightforward of just people punching each other in the face. And they don't look like anything but normal people with just different clothes on. They don't look like super powered individuals. And so having a big dude like Adam West punch her in the face might not go over so well in an era where it's not established that these people have any kind of powers other than just super smart or super crazy.
Yeah.
And the choreography doesn't appear to be martial arts or elegant in any way.
That's true. That's true.
And if of the era, hitting a woman?
No.
You've got to be out of your mind. There's no way Batman or Robin would ever hit a woman.
I feel like that was a plot point. Or her
hitting someone.
I feel like that was a plot point in one of the TV series at one point. Is like, it was like a woman and Robin was like, I can't hit her. I just can't do it, Batman. Whatever. Yeah,
that sounds reasonable.
She does kick someone at one point, and I think it's even in their butt.
I feel like at one point she does. She sneaks up behind either Batman or Robin on the submarine and shoves them into the water.
Yeah. But even that, like that was most of her sort of like physical.
Right. Her main role, though, is like you said, a deception. She's wearing a little tiny mask, too, that just covers her eyes, and then little tiny cat ears. And she takes those off and changes her hairstyle. And Batman has no idea that this beautiful Russian woman is also Catwoman. And she seduces him in a very oddball way. They just go for a carriage ride together. And she has the most amazing device to be able to signal the other bad guys.
It's a more cat Morse code device that meows Morse code. I did like that. She also has her nails are incredible. I thought that those were actually very, very cool. To anyone who is a Catwoman person, it was like she was wearing fingerless gloves with like these fantastic gold talons. That was cool.
It was an amazing portrayal. Then you've got, in addition to Catwoman, you've got, and Jeff, you kind of said it's like Joker and Riddler kind of trying to out crazy each other.
Yeah.
And Michael, you called that earlier, like very bright primary colored outfits too. So like some bright purple and green on Joker and super bright green and purple on the Riddler in ways that I feel were pretty accurate to the way they were colored in the comic books at the time, because you're talking about newsprint, you're talking about four color, and you want something right. that's going to pop off the page and be instantly eye appealing. Green and purple is a combination that you see in a lot of comic book characters. The Hulk was green and purple. So it's a combination that worked well in comics for a long time. And they just take that, put the silly putty on it, peel it off, and then put it on the screen. There you go.
Well, we were talking about this, like the Joker, his face makeup, he had a mustache and he didn't even shave it. They just like white putty makeup right over his stash.
Cesar Romero was not about to shave off the mustache that gave him a career. There was no way in the world.
It didn't bother me, but it was noticeable.
Cesar Romero is the one name that was familiar to me on things outside Batman. What mm-hmm. was his deal, Jeff? And why wouldn't he shave that mustache?
He was a famous romantic leading man for years and years and years. And he went on after Batman to be one of my favorite Disney villains of all time, A.J. Arno from the Dexter Riley movies with Kurt Russell. But that mustache, that pencil thin mustache of his was always there, every movie he made. And it, like you said, that's my trademark. I'm not losing it just so you can put me in a clown outfit.
This is like back in the 60s too. So it's like if he's filming Batman, he's probably filming two more movies simultaneously.
Oh, easily. That and, you know, whatever other TV appearances he might be doing. Sure.
His name is Cesar Romano?
Romero.
Okay, this is why I'm confused. I just Googled this to look at images because you said he was a heartthrob or what have you.
And you came up with Corky Romano?
Well, no, I came up with salad dressing. Because I didn't type in Romero, I typed in Romano. So I was like, what is this? I must have had a typo here. Okay, continue, please.
Cesar Romano. Yeah, if only they had the technology back in the day that they used to give Henry Cavill a really crappy removed digital mustache.
Oh, that was the worst.
The Justice League movie.
That was so bad.
You will believe a man can fly, but not that he has no mustache.
But not that he can shave.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought it was fascinating because I don't know that we've, you know, there's lots of combinations of Batman villains in recent movies, and the most recent one sort of sets up a Joker Riddler meetup mm-hmm. at some point, but in this one there's like scenes where they're just laughing maniacally in each other's faces, almost like who can out laugh the other person.
Oh, absolutely. It's insane. And it's they're trying to get that manic energy from the comic books and slap it up on screen, like you said, with the silly putty. And apart from each other, it really works. It's great. Together, which one of them are you going to smack first? Because stop it.
And the Riddler is using what looked to be nuclear warheads to launch.
Yeah, stock footage of Polaris missiles launching from submarines.
To just skywrite riddles in the air. For Batman to solve, because he's addicted to this. He's gonna create riddles for Batman to solve. He's gotta, and he explains it in some reason of why he's gotta like leave these clues for Batman. And for a while it makes sense because he's leading Batman down a certain path, but at some point, like the it's in this movie, the Joker almost becomes secondary. The Joker has not a ton of purpose in this movie other than to be in it and to keep saying yo ho.
it is weird though, because I guess I always sort of felt like the Joker was the captain of the villains, right? Like some of the others would pulse in and out, but he's like the main villain in the Batman universe in my mind, right, or in like the Batman of my childhood.
But in this, movie, in this one, Penguin, to your point,
Penguin's
kind of running the show.
Mm-hmm. What is Penguin's whole deal in this movie? Burgess Meredith
quacks a lot.
Yes,
and his nose doesn't look weird unless you look from the side.
Yeah, quacking is because Burgess Meredith had quit smoking years before, and then they give him that cigarette holder, and he's smoking the cigarettes, and he's coughing and choking, so he does a hur, 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 to cover up the fact that he's coughing.
I asked about this because he had the, like, you know, that the cigarette holder. Uh-huh. And there's one point where the ash is like growing. And I was like, do you think he was really smoking that? Or is it just like sitting there?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting. That is interesting context.
Can you do the Joker quack or the Penguin quack again?
I mean, I did like that though, because it wasn't, the quack wasn't it. It actually wasn't as exaggerated in some way. It almost felt a little bit like, oh, this is just like some weird tick that the guy, this guy has.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Popeye, you know, it's just a little.
Pickle guy.
What?
The Elastic Pickle guy.
Which is based off of Groucho Marx.
The Groucho Marx stork. All right.
Vlasic pickles. See, you do know older things, Michael.
I know stuff. I'm not too young.
It's mostly people trying to prove that they are young. You're like, I'm not that young.
No, I'm old as shit. I love it first. I'm sorry.
But very comic accurate portrayal of his costume too. The purple top hat, monocle, cigarette holder, long nose. He's just sort of like running the show. This is like his submarine. Which I don't think they commandeered. So I'm still confused of what Commodore Schmidlap's role in the whole scheme was.
Well, he was impersonating Commodore Schmidlap at one point.
But why?
Yeah.
To gain access to the Batcave.
He did that at some point, but that was later.
He was going to rehydrate the bad guys.
Exactly. He rehydrates his goons in the Batcave. Unfortunately, he doesn't.
Guinea pigs.
Yeah. So. Unfortunately, he does it with heavy water by mistake and makes them unstable. But the whole point was to gain access to the Batcave to do something. I'm not sure what the ultimate goal is, but
get into the Batcave. Yeah. And then that's they call it the most technologically advanced whatever, because obviously he had his own water machine, his own water cooler in the Batcave.
Yeah.
All right. So any other thoughts on these villains, Michael? Like portrayals, like, okay, so we talked about Catwoman, past, present, Riddler. You talked about parallels with Jim Carrey. How's this Joker stack up in the whole continuum of Jokers?
I mean, I felt like the Jack Nicholas Joker and this Joker felt reminiscent. I thought those felt like they were parallel. I don't know. I liked him. He didn't have as much of a role as like the lead villain as I recalled from other Batman scenarios, but I did like his coloring and like the extremity of sort of like character.
Overall, his character really didn't serve a purpose.
No. He just looked cool.
Yeah. Overall, the villains are less threatening, right? Because it's just a less threatening, dark type movie. Right. Then you've got Penguin and this Penguin versus Colin Farrell. And you say you don't know Colin Farrell's Penguin, Michael, but you just saw the Batman movie.
I know. I have the worst memory. I just don't really. I just.
Do you remember the dude who owned the nightclub? Do you remember the nightclub?
I did remember the nightclub, but I guess I just like graced right over it.
You know the guy? Hey, sweetheart, Oz, the guy. He was great.
Yeah. Well, and it was weird because I remember not thinking that was the guy that was Colin Farrell. Like did such a great job with the makeup. I was like, that's not Colin Farrell. And I was like, holy crap. That I remember being extreme.
Better makeup, that or Burgess Meredith's nose?
The thing is, Burgess Meredith's nose wasn't that extreme.
It didn't look that fake either.
Looking at him head on, I thought it was real. It was just when he was at the side that I was like, oh, they put a schnoz on that guy.
Yeah, high def doesn't do the makeup any favor.
No.
Or the backgrounds.
Yeah, no.
The
penguin in this movie, the Batman movie with, you know, the Burgess Meredith, he's kind of the mastermind of the whole thing. In the Robert Pattinson one, he's kind of a background guy who's kind of playing, you know, playing one against the other, trying to gain advantage and become the crime lord that he's bound to be. And it's a bit like comparing apples to oranges. The two are very, very different. And each one is really, really great in their own way. And they did pay homage to Burgess Meredith at one point in the Batman movie when Oz was tied up and his ankles were tied and he was trying to walk and ended up waddling like Burgess Meredith.
Hey, nice callback. Good job, Matt Reeves. I like the Easter eggs there. So that's the villains. You know, I don't know. The other last thing I wanted to touch on was the henchmen, which is always nice to not just have generic thugs. At least these are pirate themed thugs.
Bluebeard.
Something Fink. I forget the guy's name.
Oh, I don't remember any of their names.
Quetch. I thought his name was Quetch.
Maybe. It was nice that the henchmen weren't just generic. They wore like pirate costumes.
Yeah.
And then the other ones all dressed the same with the GP1 through GP5 on their shirts. That was something I was appreciated about classic Batman is that they at least they dressed it up a little bit. You just didn't have some spare actor wandering off the street. Put the guy in wardrobe. Get him dressed up, his own name
on his shirt.
Right. How else are the villains one. Pulled apart?
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break again. You know, this is awesome because it's bringing back so many memories for me. When we come back, we'll talk about our favorite moments of the movie. And then, you know, if we're going to talk about favorite moments of the movie, you got to talk about where does he get those wonderful toys? The Bat Gadgets.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're talking Batman 1966 with Jeff and Michael, and we're coming up on my favorite part, because who is Batman without his gadgets? So in this movie, you got the Bat Cave full of Bat gadgets, right? Any what were some of the Bat gadgets that were stocked around this amazing Bat Cave he has?
Well, the centerpiece of the Bat Cave is the atomic pile that they use to power the Batmobile.
Right.
It's a big two-level set. It's the main thing you see in the Bat Cave.
It was like Tesla before Tesla. Batman charges Batmobile and nuclear energy. He just plugs it in and charges it. He's got a water cooler. You got to enjoy that. The water cooler.
Light and heavy water.
Yes. Right.
Light water, heavy water.
The poles, which when they go down, change them into their costumes. Does that count? Mm-hmm.
Right. He's in Wayne Manor.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
He's in Wayne Manor.
Yes.
And when he gets the call on the Bat phone, the bright red phone lights up. It's a hotline from the police. Time to go to that innocuous looking bust of William Shakespeare, flip the head back, press the red button, bookcase slide, reveal two poles for Batman and Robin to slide down.
And they're labeled.
For which one's for which, because it's important, because you got to flip the switch on your way down that will automatically put your costume on before you hit the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Yep. And in this movie, they introduced the steam powered bat lift, which took you back up the bat poles, which once they did it there, they could then use it in subsequent episodes of the TV show,
which seemed a little excessive to me because there's got to be a staircase.
Yeah, because Alfred comes down there and takes the elevator or the stairs back up.
He has a service elevator.
Right. So the steam powered lift back up the pole might be a little redundant.
I like it.
It's flair.
But I was thinking when he got to the top, he would be wearing his uniform, his like suit again. Like it would take him out of his Batman outfit. And
yeah. What I want to know is how does he step off the steam powered bat lift and back out into the study without, you know, slipping and falling to his death?
I just think he jumps and he somersaults in the air and lands. That's in my head what happened.
Okay.
This is a Batman with a lot of. This Batman's got a lot of panache.
He's got flair. He does.
Yeah. Other things in the Bat Cave are a machine that separates dust particles from one another.
As you,
yeah.
Which you sometimes have to have. A huge magnifying glass.
Obviously. Yes.
World's greatest detective. There's something else down there that I'm forgetting. That was like, you were like, why that thing? And why is it called the bat something?
Well, they have the bat computer, right?
The bat computer, which when operated seems like just randomly hitting a bunch of lights and buttons.
Right.
But it can't be. There's some method to the badness.
Well, of course there is. You'd have to ask Burt Ward exactly how that works because he's the one who trained on the thing and learned exactly how it works.
Like Galaxy Quest with they designed this based off of watching you on the show.
Exactly. What if Steve Jobs was like, that's how to make computers?
But everything does have a nice label on it too. So you don't have to wonder as an audience member, oh, there's the bat water cooler because it's labeled clearly. Because if Batman didn't label everything in there, how would he remember where the water cooler is?
Right. And you can tell that he's a millionaire because he doesn't have to use a Dymo tape labeler for everything. He has nice printed labels.
Right. They're like little placards on top of all of his gadgets. He's got the utility belt, which at one point, more than one point, is super useful. One point becomes a danger to him when it gets magnetized.
Yes.
But what's some of the things he's got in that utility belt? He's got shark repellent, bat shark repellent, right? Mm-hmm.
He's got bat ropes and batarangs.
Bat ropes, batarangs. He's got a radio that like makes high-pitched beeping noises.
Yes, which he drops in the ocean if you're looking carefully.
He had some kind of pill or something that prevented them from getting asphyxiated by penguins. Umbrella gas.
Anti-penguin
gas pills.
Oh, yes. Okay, fine. I don't know why I started describing it in any other way. It's like anti-penguin gas.
It's a very specific thing with a very specific, not if it was Joker gas, forget it. It doesn't work. This is very specifically formulated to, and in his cunning ruse, somehow the penguin doesn't think he's been discovered, that Batman thinks he is Commodore Spidlap. So the Batman's plan is I take the pill, I give Robin the pill, I wake him up, and then he gasses us. We pretend that we're knocked out, and then we follow him in the sweet Batmobile because it's got a Batmobile tracker on it.
Well, we follow him on our Bat motorcycle that we hid under a bunch of daisies and weeds.
Yes, the Bat vehicles, the Batmobile.
Yes.
He's got
the Batcopter.
Batcopter.
The Batcycle.
The Batcycle with the sweet sidecar.
Yes. There's a bat boat too.
The bat boat, which was made by a customizer in Austin, Texas, which is why they premiered the film there.
What?
Yeah. Michael, your favorite was that bat cycle though, because it had the sweet sidecar.
I just said I just felt like Robin was always in just this little silly position of being like, I'm just like tagging along, buddy. But it makes perfect sense. Sorry, can we back up? It makes perfect sense that they did this in Austin because Austin has the whole bat bridge thing. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No idea.
There was a bridge, South Congress Bridge in Austin. There's all these bats that live under the bridge. And during certain times of the year, when it gets to dusk, the bats come out en masse. And it's this like huge thing it's one of the tourist things you do when you go to Austin. So there's another reason why it makes sense that it debuted in Austin.
And they strike fear into the hearts of criminals everywhere.
I was waiting for the bats
because they're a superstitious, cowardly lot.
To make the bat symbol on the moon. And it didn't happen. And I was sorely disappointed. And I will never go back to Austin.
I don't blame you. That and they tried to steal our soccer team in Columbus. Get out of here, Austinites. If there's anybody from Austin listening on the podcast, it's not you.
We're just kidding. We love Austin. We'll be back soon.
But yeah, it's some amazing. I think though, when we talked about the bat cycle, Michael, you actually appreciated the fact that the bat cycle popped apart when they got to the bat copter. Mm-hmm. So Batman could drive to the one side and Robin's sidecar would take him to the other side. So they didn't have to walk too far to get in the helicopter. Nobody had to walk around.
I was like, this is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Well, man. They didn't want to get decapitated. So they wanted to stay as low as possible for as long as they could. Right on up to the doors.
That's how they do it. That's how they do it in Gotham. And then like, would just love to cap things off on Michael. What was like the one scene in this movie that you're like, that is the scene that is incredible and makes you got to watch this movie.
I keep talking about it because I can't stop because it's the most ridiculous scene. But the shark scene.
Well, tell the people about the shark scene.
Well, he's out in the bat copter and he goes down the like rope ladder to the sea. I can't remember even why he's going down there because my memory is shot. But he gets down there and all of a sudden there's a shark that attaches onto one of his legs. And it's a very long scene where he's just hanging onto this rope ladder with the shark attached to his leg. And he's yelling up to Robin that he needs some help. And Robin comes down and does some acrobatics to hand him some bat repellent. And then just as he gets the shark loose from his leg, which seemingly doesn't take his leg off, which is astounding, the shark explodes because it's an exploding shark, which is part of obviously what the villains had maneuvered. So it was a really good opening scene. Yeah, I didn't know when shark... you guys asked me to watch this what to expect, and I knew pretty quick what I was getting myself into when I saw that.
That shark was making his, I believe, second appearance in film. He was also originally Peter Lorre's pet shark in the movie Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Ooh. Stop.
Yeah.
Connections everywhere. I think the one scene that summarizes this movie to me, and it's just one line of dialogue, is some days you just can't find a place to get rid of a bomb.
That is the best scene in the movie. And that was not in the script. That was improvised on and set up all by the director, Leslie Martinson. And he came up with the ducks and the nuns and the Salvation Army band and all of that stuff. And that scene is just brilliant because Batman is trying to get this bomb away from the pier, away from the wharf to save people's lives. And when they say bomb, you know, you're not talking like a bunch of wires and a little
LED clock.
No, yeah. It is a big, huge ball with a fuse sticking out of it that looks like a dang bomb. All right. And it's sputtering, spitting, and it's lit. And he's literally running everywhere with it over his head. And he can't get rid of it anywhere. Prompting the line, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. And some people have used it to describe the movie. I personally don't feel that way, but yeah, it's the best. It's the only real pure joke in the movie.
So Michael, would you recommend to any sane person that they watch this movie?
I really liked it. I would recommend you watch it. I mean, listen, I love all the new Batmans. I love the dark, gritty, you know, dramatic, horrible things that they, you know, weave throughout the new storylines, but this was fun. It was light. I really enjoyed it. At no point in the movie was like, oh my gosh, get me out of here. It was great.
Well, and kind of where we started, having watched this then and watched the most recent, The Batman, anything that you can like, there are two movies that can be any different in tone, style, sound design, costume design, you name it. Anything that you pull through and say, here's actually a similarity in this character that kind of, or any of the characters that like stays consistent, that you're like, yeah, I can still see a thread between those two.
Okay, so I have such a bad memory, but at the last scene, they're in prison and they're like just laughing, right?
Yep.
Maybe that, where like there's just like two people, like just that their laughter is contagious and they're just like two insane people going at each other laughing. But no, I wouldn't say there's a lot of similarities between the new Batman and this Batman. Not for me.
Yeah. Jeff, what do you think?
Jeff said there were a few.
Yeah, I mean the little Easter egg with the penguin waddle. That was kind of fun. But the Riddler's obsession with using ciphers and giving clues is as a shared characteristic, but that's the character. I loved how in the Batman that they made him into more of a Zodiac type serial killer. And I love how the riddles were not just to lure Batman to do things, but it was to actually get him to participate in his plan and make his plan happen, which I don't think they ever quite did that. I don't think Riddler was as manipulative in the original series and in this movie quite
in
the same way.
In the movie, it was a little bit. It was a lot of, you know, obvious that he was leaving clues, not simply because he wanted to get caught, mm-hmm. but because he was trying to lead Batman to a certain thing that would then have a certain effect. And it was almost like the Riddler did have, at least if he wasn't the mastermind of the plot, he was a key cog in getting Batman to certain places and things that had to happen to keep the villain's plans on track.
Yeah. But it was more to lead Batman to where they could kill him and get him out of the way. And in the other movie, it was Batman, I need you to perform this function so that I can do this other thing, which I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. because it just debuted on HBO Max and you can watch it there. And I highly recommend that you do. But yeah, and I guess I lost my train of thought.
If people have to pick one of the two Batman movies to watch because they only have time to watch one, HBO Max or Batman 1966, which way are you pointing them?
66, because it's short fun.
I think it would be more meaningful in that it's much more differentiated than like a lot of the more recent Batman movies, at least follow this, again, this dark, sort of gritty, dramatic theme. And if you want that, like, obviously go with the new one. But mm-hmm. if you want a differentiated view or an older school view of the character, you're getting a very unique take on it. Original take on it if you go to the 1960s version.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm going to recommend the Matt Reeves Batman movie because it's fantastic. It's a great Batman movie.
It is.
They're both good.
It's interesting because I would say, I mean, I 100% agree with everything there. I mean, it's a great movie. I did not expect it to be a good movie. I expected to go in hating it.
Yep. Why? Me too.
Why?
Is it because Robert Pattinson?
Yep.
No, I like Robert Pattinson.
Well, a lot of people don't give him credit because of sort of his origin fame story mm-hmm. of the whole Twilight thing. He was in Harry Potter before he was in Twilight.
I know him doesn't really gain any points.
But he's an incredible actor. He actually is very, very skilled. Yeah, and I think he spent a lot of his career overcoming these roles he played in his younger years. But he is quite good. He is a very different Batman though, right? Like,
oh yeah.
The like hulking, muscular, Rico Suave sort of billionaire thing. Like that is not the Batman you get in this new movie. It is a different take on sort of, or different age or progression of the character. Yeah. It's worth seeing for sure.
Yeah. I didn't have anything against Robert Pattinson. I know Robert Pattinson from The Lighthouse. You know how much I love that
you
movie.
You and those fish peppers.
That's a great movie. So I've always respected Robert Pattinson as an actor. I went in expecting to hate it because I was like, there's nothing new to say about Batman. There's nothing that I haven't seen done. There's nothing. I mean, do I need to spend 3 hours of my life on another Batman story? And fortunately, I was like hooked. And to me, a big part of it was the portrayal of the Riddler. I thought that was pretty amazing.
He was so good.
I enjoyed the fact this is what the two movies had in common. Neither one really gave that much of a crap about Bruce Wayne. It's like, just put him in the costume and let him punch people. Which I appreciated. Yep. Give him the Batmobile, let him race around, let him be a detective. So I had those things in common between that movie and this movie. But I was thinking I had nothing to gain from seeing yet another portrayal of Batman. I was wrong. I did, but I agree with you, Michael, in that if what you're looking for is saying, I've seen every Batman movie, I think I've seen every Batman movie, and I'm tired of dark, gritty Batman. I want to see a different portrayal of Batman. This is as different as you'll get. This is like unlike any other portrayal of Batman. Similar sometimes in tone, I think, to, like you said, the Penguin portrayal in the Tim Burton movie a little bit, but you're not going to get anything like this. It is a lot more kid friendly. And I always get a chuckle out of the moments where they're trying to teach a lesson because it's so funny and it's so fun. And it, you know, as a grown up, it's so obvious that like, why is he making such a big deal about buckling their seatbelt? Well, back in that day, nobody buckled their seatbelt. Public service.
Yeah.
I think, I'm going to end on the famous words of wisdom you gave us from Adam West, Jeff, which is the Bright Knight is such a different portrayal than anything else that you normally get. So thanks for watching Batman 1966 again with me, Team Jeff. We're going to take another episode, our next shot at this. We're going to do a little bit more. Michael, if you can join us, it would be great. If not, but I want to carry this thread of Batman into a part two on the Batman 1966. They did make an animated follow-up recently to this, voiced by Adam West. There is...
They made two.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, Jeff. Wrong one. They made two.
So want to talk about the straight to video Batman follow-ups with Adam West and Burt Ward. Want to talk about the comic book series Batman 66, and then we'll talk about the Ahoy Comics series The Wrong Earth, which has Batman analogs from two different Earths, a dark and gritty Batman swapping places with the 1960s version of Batman. So we'll talk about those podcasts and other ways for people who might be interested in this era of Batman to re-enjoy that era of the dynamic duo. But thanks so much for joining me on this. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. It was great. I love talking about Adam West Batman. I do it anytime.
You do a great job.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, everybody. Thanks for joining us to all the listeners out there. We appreciate you sticking with us through all the nonsense. Remember to subscribe, download, however you get your podcasts. We should be just about anywhere if you're listening to us. I assume you kind of already know that. But with that, we'll say goodnight, everybody. Jeff, you want to do the same bat time, same bat? Come on, give us the best announcer out here, Jeff.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
All right. Cheers, perfect. Everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers.
You need to take a drink there, Michael.
Like how quiet I was?
That was good.
Yeah, that bio break sounded better and better.
Do we need to take a real pause? Take a
quick break, Jeff?
I might need to run real quick.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go. Better than being uncomfortable. I wonder where I did with my phone. Oh, we're still recording. Are we not going to stop recording?
No, I'll
cut. Oh, we're it. Just going to cut all this.
That was good. That was like a solid 12 minutes.
Was it? Felt longer.
Nope, I got the stopwatch running.
Not in a bad way.
We covered a lot.
We did.
Yep.
Why are you making that weird face?
Tired.
Tell me about it. I'm having.
I literally, tomorrow, there's like one thing I wanted to do, and I blocked myself off. My calendar is entirely open the entire day, except like 11:30 to 1:30. I need to leave for an appointment, get something done. Like, you that's have a day it. Off? What?
You have a PTO day?
No, but my calendar is completely open except that time, and people keep trying to put stuff on that time. I'm like, I'm open the rest of the day.
You're like, this now, is the time I will not now, talk to you.
And now my boss rescheduled something that was at a different time and put it at that time. And he's like, this is the only time I can meet now. I'm like,
well, I'm sorry.
The only time I'm trying to not meet.
You tell him, since you can't use the age old excuse of I'm going to be sick or busy at that time, you got to tell him you have an appointment. That's like an embarrassing appointment. Like I got a colonoscopy at that time. I'm going to be at my proctologist.
I got to see a guy about my butt.
I'm serious. It's like
I got some.
I always
real...
tell people, they're like, "Man, I don't really want to go to that thing." And I'm like, "This is what you do because no one's ever going to argue with you about this excuse. Tell them you've got diarrhea.
Just it's like, what?
if you tell them you have diarrhea, they're not going to argue with you about it because it's embarrassing for everyone to talk about diarrhea. So you just tell them you got diarrhea, and then everyone will leave you alone, and you don't have to go to the thing you want to get out of.
I hate to say I can't. I hate to say it. I can't make it at that time, but I had a real problem with the pooper.
Joe has people who keep scheduling over a certain block in his calendar that he has blocked off for an appointment. I said, you just need to tell him that the appointment is for something very embarrassing, like it's a proctology appointment. And he was like, yeah, I'm just gonna like put on there, I gotta go see a guy about my butt.
Nice.
Great. Said,
this part's not gonna be in the recording.
Are you sure?
Nope. I don't entirely trust you, but
that's why I'm withholding my story.
Oh, Jeff, no withholding.
Something there.
No, I got on my car at work this morning and I'm like, why in God's name does the parking lot smell like diarrhea farts? What is going on?
Were you parked by the sewer drain?
No, I have no
idea. Were you parked by Runza?
There's a Runza about a half a mile away. I was just like, what? Why is that?
Why?
All right, let's get back to this nonsense. And then we can get on to the real nonsense when we're done. It's good. This business. And then.
Yes. And then pleasure.
Then the butt stuff.
What are you doing?
That sounded really bad.
What are you doing? Pleasuring you?
What is that from?
Seinfeld? Oh. Where George is like, eating a sandwich and trying to watch TV in bed with his girlfriend, and she catches him. She's like, what are you doing? Pleasuring you.
Oh my golly.